Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York's snowy Times Square. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Steve Grasso, David Seberg, and Tim Seymour. Tonight on Fast, the Facebook fallout rages on, but the stock snapping its losing streak, ending the day in the green. And one of the traders bought the social media giant today. He will explain why he thinks the bottom is in. Plus, the winner of the Facebook fallout, it might be blockchain. A top analyst at RBC will explain why the data scandal could be the next big catalyst for the technology and what it might mean for big tech stocks. But first, we start with the Federal Reserve decision to raise rates. Fed Chair Jerome Powell toeing the line, not too hawkish, not too dovish. Let's get to our own Steve Leisman down in D.C. for more. Steve, what was your take?
You know, first of all, let's tell people exactly what happened. It was the first press conference for Fed Chairman Jay Powell, and the Fed hiked rates as expected by a quarter point. Here's the new range, folks, 1.5 to 1.75%. The Fed did also signal more gradual rate hikes ahead. Now, it also upped the outlook for growth and lowered the forecast for unemployment down to 3.6% from the current 4.1% next year. Also raised the outlook for interest rates. Here you go. Not this year. One forecast short from a Fed official for four hikes this year, so remains at three, but up the outlook to 2.9% next year and a strong 3.4% in 2020, but it did not move the inflation barometer or the inflation outlook. And I asked Chairman Jay Powell how they could forecast better growth, lower unemployment, but not more inflation.
After the crisis, unemployment was 10%. It's now 4.1%. You've only seen very gradual upward pressures on inflation and wages despite that very large increase. And that suggests that the relationship between changes in slack and inflation is not so tight. But it has diminished, but it's still there.
The non-economist Powell sounding a lot like an economist. Here's our new segment, Powell on the Podium. He's surprised at a lack of stronger wage growth. Despite high relative levels of the stock markets, he's only moderate stability risk for the financial system and sees more growth from fiscal stimulus, but wouldn't be pinned down. Is it from supply side or demand side, which would be more inflationary? So in the words of John Lennon, did Powell pass the audition? Yields were little changed on the day, so that's probably a win. And stocks just a bit spooked down 130 from their top before the meeting. So if that remains the case, given how much the Fed upped the rate outlook, I think he'd probably consider that a win, Melissa.
So, Steve, if the relationship between slack and inflation is not so tight, what did he give any good answers to why inflation is so low and so stubbornly low?
Both in this one and in prior ones, he's interested in this idea, Melissa, and I mean prior testimony that he's given, right. Whether or not there's this global supply chain that's out there. The Amazon effect is also something that's out there. But I think he also said in the testimony, and you can see that, by the way, in what the Fed did today. They're more confident about inflation moving back up. It was in the statement today where they said they think inflation is going to rise in coming months. Prior statements had said in the coming years. So they're a little bit more confident it's moving back their way towards that 2% goal.
All right. Steve, thank you.
My pleasure.
Steve Leisman. The market having a volatile reaction to the decision today, but ultimately the Dow ending the day nearly flat. So did Jerome Powell signal the all clear for stocks, Tim?
No, I don't think he did. I think Powell basically told you, read my lips. This is one decision, one meeting. We did one thing today. And by the way, I can do whatever I want at the next meeting. I thought it was a hawk in disguise. Having said that, obviously, there was a relief for the stock market that now actually can probably breathe some sigh of relief until at least a couple of weeks until we get the next round of inflation data or wage data on payroll.
Where did you get I could do whatever I want at the next meeting or the meeting after or whatnot?
Because, first of all, he was asked two or three times mm-hmm. about issues where he said, folks, we made one decision today. We raised rates 25 basis points. And what I hear from that, especially for a guy who's one vote away from four hikes this year, means they could be at four hikes at the next one. Why would he bring that up now? So ultimately, there is nothing for this Fed chairman to gain in his first proper policy announcement meeting right. to go that deep into, I think, something that, frankly, we don't know a lot about.
Yeah. No, I think he managed it very well. I mean, I think the market's reaction proves he managed it very well. But the real headline here, next headline, in my opinion, is technology. Technology stocks led the rally. Technology stocks are the most crowded investment right now on the tape in the S&P. And I look at it and say, we need to take a really hard look at tech right now and see, is there going to be a near-term pause and is there a catalyst to cause a near-term pause? There is, 301. I think that there could be some trade
how
discussions.
How long could you have said that it was the crowded, most crowded trade?
We've been saying it for a while, but the difference is
how long could you, I mean, you could say it for a while.
Yeah, no, that could last for a period of time. The difference is I look at catalysts. What's the catalyst to shift positioning? What's the catalyst to encourage people to sell
stock? Was the Fed decision in this at all? Because all you mentioned was trade.
Absolutely. No, the Fed decision was fine. Okay. I think the Fed did a great job. I think Powell did an amazing job today.
But separately, you want to sell technology.
Separately, is it an all clear sign? No, you got to be careful of the 301.
You know, I don't know necessarily that I felt like there was a sell signal of any kind out there or necessarily saying, hey, it's free to buy everything. I think what he basically told us today was, hey, look, I'm going to be as transparent as what we've seen in the past, and I'm actually going all the way out to 2020. I mean, he gave us projections out there, giving us at least some sort of
which no one really cares about at the end of the day, right?
I mean, the Fed's terrible forecasters out that many years. We're looking at 18, and we're looking at how many hikes we most likely are going to have. And for right now, at least, it's three. Is there a fourth? It's a possibility.
We knew
but
that
I like
going
that
in.
Flexibility quick. Yeah, exactly right. Which I think is why the market's reaction early was financials took off to the upside. We were up 200 and some odd points. Then we had that flush to the downside. We mixed around a little bit. At the end of the day, it's pretty much a flat day, and I think that's probably a good thing, as Steve alluded to.
So I think to your point, whether it was the all clear or not, I agree with Tim. It gave him flexibility to do whatever he wants going forward, but it was a hurdle. The market had to jump over this hurdle to get it out of the way. It was his first press conference. Everyone wanted to see, did he flub it? Was he going to hit a wall? He didn't do any of that. So to the extent it was an all clear to buy stocks, there's where I stay. I think it was an all clear to buy stocks. We got that out of the way. We focus on earnings now, which will be good. Well, and I don't think analysts have ratcheted up their EPS forecast nearly enough, and I don't think 100% of analysts. So if there's 10 or 20% that have not ratcheted up, I think that is still your tailwind. We have not talked about earnings once in the last 2 weeks on this desk as a whole on a macro level.
Except for the fact that the last 3 weeks, we haven't really been struggling with the Fed. We haven't really been struggling. Look, the 10-year has been at 290 or below for the last 5 weeks. So I don't think the Fed was really the hurdle for the markets. I think that the hurdle for markets has been trade. It's been Washington.
Yeah. It's been inflation. Inflation started this whole sell-off.
Okay, that was all clear now.
Well, to the extent of all clear, meaning we've got out of the way with his first, meeting. Yes, it's all clear. Do I think there could be another swoosh? Of course, it's a trading show. But we defended the 100-day moving average. We closed pretty strong today. We're above 2,700. These are all good things. All clear, it's a stock market. No one could ever say it's all
clear. I think in a vacuum, if you're just focused on the Fed, it's an all clear. From a Fed perspective, but there's so many other issues here right now that we need to keep in our sights. And I think, again, I mentioned tech. I mentioned the crowdedness of that nature of that particular sector.
What was the question?
And there's other things. I mean, the idea is
Did the Fed signal an all clear for markets? Did the Fed specifically? And there may be a pipeline of other things in the offing when it comes to hurdles for the markets. But as far as the Fed is concerned,
yes, I think they did.
Did we come out of this meeting with the confirmation of what we knew before the meeting? I would posit pretty much yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Three, maybe four, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. So in Steve's defense, which maybe is what he was saying.
I can always use defending.
Even though he's...
Have at it.
No, but if we're dealing with just the Fed factor, okay?
Yeah.
The Fed factor is now at least something that can go on the side for a couple more weeks until we get real data. Steve answered the right question.
But I feel like there's a big but coming.
But there's a whole host of other things.
I appreciate that.
I sincerely believe that there are multiple other factors to for stocks to digest right now.
Right.
That
when you need defending on that shirt tie combo, I'm going to be your guy. I'm going to be your guy.
Because you're so used to defending shirt tie combos yourself.
This is about as basic as
very British.
That's basic.
If I'm having trouble with this one, we're all having trouble today.
It's great if you're in Miami.
Forget it. I want to bring in Rebecca Patterson. We need help here. Chief Investment Officer at Bessemer Trust. She oversees $70 billion in assets under management. Rebecca, thank goodness you're here. Welcome to the show.
Where do we start?
Let's not talk about how
no shirts.
What did you make of what Jerome Powell said today?
I agree with what's been said on this desk, is that we're basically confirming what we thought we knew already, which is 3, maybe 4 hikes this year. And Powell is focusing on the lack of inflation pressure, so he doesn't seem to need to be aggressive. And one thing that hasn't been said yet in terms of the reaction, we got higher commodity prices, higher energy stocks, weaker dollar. Part of that was the Treasury not moving very much at the end of the day. But it also tells you the market is seeing this as a dovish hike, or in other words, a central banker who doesn't feel any urgency to ratchet it up. Yeah. And that's, at the end of the day, all else equal is good for stocks.
But all else isn't equal, and so trade is looming, and that's
yes,
going to be
tomorrow.
An issue that could be
that's,
tomorrow.
That's or, tomorrow's show. Yeah. You don't, yeah, you want me to front run your show.
But how do you look at stocks at this point? Now that we have this sort of uncertainty out of the way, at least for now, and we have this other, all these other problems or issues potentially lined up, what do you do?
So it's been fascinating to me to watch over the last 12 months how this administration seems to be playing the media and the investor community, in a sense that we get this big scary headline, $30 billion isn't enough. I need $60 billion or $100 billion in tariffs against China, as an example. And then what the media is suggesting today is that when we get tomorrow's announcement on trade, we will have a period of time for U.S. companies to comment, because we want to hurt China, according to the administration, but we don't want to punish U.S. consumers. Well, good luck with that, right, given that so much of what we import is coming one way or another through China. But if you have this commentary period and this waiting period, what we eventually get in terms of tariffs or trade action seems like it's going to be a lot less than the initial scary headline. And I feel like this pattern is repeating on a lot of issues, whether it was the solar panel tariff. I'm going to drill oil off all the coasts. Oh, except Florida. Well, maybe except for you, except for you. So if it's sort of this scare them with a headline, whether it's a negotiating tactic or what, I don't know. But the reality is never as bad. And so we get this initial dip on the scare factor, and then we recover. And I feel like tomorrow's trade may be more of that. So I'm crossing my fingers.
Okay, so Fed for now goes away as a factor. Trade will probably for now at least go away as a factor.
Yes. Inflation, though, don't let that one go away, because the March inflation data is going to have a funky little base effect. In other words, a sharp fall in telecom prices a year ago falls away, so that's no longer there. So the March number might look suddenly a higher. And so if the market is not ready for that, if it doesn't get it discussed a lot in advance, we might have a bit of inflation fear coming back in that report, which will come out next month.
But that'll be a head fake. So theoretically, the markets are efficient. They'll figure that out, and then that goes away. And then earning. I mean, it sounds
I'm
like
constructive.
You're constructive.
I hate that
yeah.
word. It's overused. Oh. But no. Look, we're later in the cycle. Central banks are starting to slowly take away the punch bowl. Valuations are higher. There is reason to be not looking for a repeat of last year. But I also think that I don't see any reason why equity shouldn't go up this year. Earnings are strong. The global economy is very strong. We just got a ton of stimulus into the U.S. economy. Why would equities go down in a sustained way on that?
So Rebecca, sector allocation-wise, think about today, and you talked about energy had a great day, commodities had a great day, dollar was weaker. These had been suffering over the last couple of weeks on all the things we've just talked about. What do you like here?
Well, we started building a slightly larger energy position last August, and so we've been modestly overweight energy equities since then. So we have been suffering, as you said, the last couple of weeks on a relative basis. Today was obviously a nice day for those market. We have been overweight technology, which in recent days has been a bit all over the map. But on a structural basis, we still like it. And we think the valuations on the companies we particularly own are justified, even though a few of them are quite high. What else do we like? We like being slightly overweight the U.S., going from sector to regional. And even though the U.S. valuations are higher than the rest of the world, we feel like the stimulus here should be a beneficiary. But we've also been adding to emerging market exposure, believing that China's slowdown won't be enough to undermine emerging markets, and that yields aren't going to rise fast enough, the dollar's not going to rise fast enough to undermine emerging markets. So we like modest exposure to the U.S. We like emerging markets late cycle. Not shockingly, we like energy and commodities, too.
Rebecca, great to see you. Thank
great
you.
Great to see you all. Thank
Rebecca
you.
Rebecca Patterson of Bessemer. Pete, what'd you do today?
You know what? I added on a couple of different things, and some of them we'll probably touch on later on the show, but GM was one of the names that I added to today. I added some Southwest as well, the airline, and I think there was one, Facebook, along with Albemarle, just from yesterday. So pretty active the last couple of days.
Yeah.
I bought Facebook today.
You did.
Along with Pete. I don't know if you bought the straight equity or bought an option related.
Calls.
So I bought the equity just on a technical basis, and I have some fundamental reasons. But the home builders, off the numbers today, granted, the home builders usually react to new permits. Today, it was existing home sales. I think all of this has been baked in, and they've been clobbered. It's probably bullish now.
Yeah, sure, energy. I think energy is, it was a short covering rally today, especially in these smaller mid-cap names. It is 100% a sell at these levels, so took them off.
Love the Southwest call. Love.
Nice. Get it. LUV, get it. Hey.
Well done.
But I do think if you look at miners, integrated miners, BHP, Rio Tinto, you look at Mexico, Brazil, they've had very big days today, but those are stocks that have all weakened or countries that have weakened up, and I think you can get back in there.
All right, coming up, the Northeast getting battered by its fourth nor'easter, and with thousands of flights canceled today, the airlines are feeling the heat. But how long will the pain last? The traders will weigh in. Plus, five stocks in the Dow are in or near bear market territory, down 20% from their recent highs. And a top technician will be here to tell us which names are a screaming buy. And later, Mark Zuckerberg speaks out about the data scandal gripping the social media company. But did he convince shareholders the worst is over? We'll bring you the latest details. We're live from a very snowy Times Square in New York City. We've got much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Facebook shares catching a break today as CEO Mark Zuckerberg finally breaks his silence about the company's data breach. Julia Borson's in LA with more. Julia.
Well, it's Mark Zuckerberg taking full responsibility without actually apologizing, posting on Facebook, quote, "We have a responsibility to protect your data and are working to make sure that this doesn't happen again." Zuckerberg runs through a timeline of events, including the revelation in 2015 that an app developer's data had been sold to Cambridge Analytica, violating Facebook's policies. Zuckerberg admitting a, quote, "breach of trust between Facebook and the people who share their data with us and expect us to protect it." Zuckerberg then outlines next steps that the company is taking. First, the company will investigate all apps with access to large amounts of data, including data collected before policy changes. Second, saying that they'll restrict data access to current apps, automatically reducing the data that its users share. And third, they're putting privacy controls at the top of the newsfeed to make it easy to revoke apps' permission to access users' data. The company also will alert users about data misuse, including those whose data was harvested by the app in question. The company is also expanding its bug bounty program and will reward people who find data misuse. Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook COO, sharing Zuckerberg's post with more of an apology, saying, quote, "I deeply regret that we didn't do enough to deal with it." Jamie Dimon was just on stage at an Axios event. He weighed in just after Zuck posted, saying that of all the data being collected by Facebook and others, he said this.
All of that data, location, shopping, sites, where you travel, places you visit, all of that has been accumulated, sold, marketed all around the world, okay? And so Facebook's a piece of it. I think people have the right to know what it is and where it is and how it's controlled and why it's controlled. And I think it's true for all these data providers.
Now, after Facebook shares dropped almost 10% from the open on Monday to the close yesterday, today the stock moved up a little bit less than 1%. Melissa, back over to you.
All right. Thank you, Julia. Julia Borson. So did Zuckerberg say enough? Have we seen a bottom in the stock? You know what struck me today, Pete? I know you're a buyer. Bloomberg Business Week put on their cover Facebook and the problems it's in. I felt like that may have marked a bottom.
Yeah,
whenever you see it on a cover, right?
No, you make a really good point. I mean, oftentimes it's so interesting, the timing of some of these different things. I think the interesting thing for me about Facebook right here is you're 20 bucks or thereabouts off of the highs. 30 bucks, I think, out the highs if you go from high to low. So it looked to me like an opportunity today, but I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And
it's only 10%, though, Pete. Anyway.
I understand, 10%, but that's oftentimes what I'm looking for. If they've hit a high, if they're breaking through, I look for 10% more. If they're not, and I see a pullback, 10%. Here's the thing that's interesting about Facebook is it's not just a Facebook story. It's all the other areas that they have been growing towards. And what I mean by that is the Instagrams and the monetization that they've actually accomplished already there. There is more to the story than just Facebook. And I would also say, they have done a poor job of getting in front of this, in my opinion. They waited so long. And even this is all text. I mean, are they really out in front the way Jamie Dimon has been and way other great CEOs, when they've had an issue, they get out in front of the cameras and they say, this is a problem, we're going to fix it, here's what happened, here's how we're going
to
do it.
They tried to get in front of it on Friday ahead of article of, you know, news reports, which was really clumsy and I think actually backfired on them.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
First of all, Facebook is describing themselves as a victim. They're not apologizing. Been victimized, it means they've actually been attacked. And it actually means that they were unprepared. It actually means that I think company whose business is software and algos was not prepared for a hack, a cyber attack, whatever you want to call
it. I disagree on that.
But I mean, so this is why I think you have to look at companies like Facebook at least a little bit differently. It doesn't mean everything you said, Pete, I agree. And I don't think Facebook's going to zero. But I do think that companies who rely on data, who rely on software, and in a new world where their management, and this is supposed to be the best and the brightest, were caught off guard by this, I think it's a new way to look at companies. And I think you have to look at the whole sector differently.
I agree with each. I think the one thing I would say that I don't agree with is the response. The response is, I mean, there's a difference between being arrogant and being confident. Jamie Dimon's confident. He comes out and he tells it how it is, and he walks you through a series of events that occurred, and he wraps it up. And he's very forthright about that. They let this go. And that's a sign of arrogance, in my opinion. And I think that's a very bad sign.
They let this go how?
They allowed it to fester. They didn't come out immediately and talk about it.
I don't think they did it.
They didn't even apologize for
arrogance.
You have to understand how to manage your customers, your employees, your business, the whole nine yards. The numbers for the business are going to be fine. You're 100% right. However, the confidence that it struck a chord in confidence, in my opinion, that is going to be, it's going to take a long time to replace.
No.
So I could make the argument right now.
I don't think it's a Chipotle.
Sentiment has shifted very rapidly in this name, and it will continue to. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see a generalist
sell it?
Move out.
So that's
So
I bought it today as well, and I bought it. It's a 3-day rule for me. I bought it defending the 161.95 low on day two, basically, technically. But as far as advertising dollars, this is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. You could talk a good game, not you guys. The people that are saying, I'm going to pull my ads, they're not going to pull their ads. They have to be here. Ultimately, this is going to be a buy again. Can it trade back down to those lows? Certainly, but technically,
the notion that they don't pull their ads must rest, though, on the belief that the number of users engaged or the number of users in total does not change at all.
You have to believe that. Leaps and bounds ahead of the competition.
Ahead of Google?
On valuation, this is the lowest that Facebook has ever traded.
I agree with you, Steve, but I think about this.
With huge growth.
And I feel like 3-day rule, I get that too, but I'm not sure if we're 3 days out. I mean, 3 days may not be for 3 months. That's the whole problem. And
I think they wanted to get the story right. It wasn't out of arrogance. They wanted to make sure they didn't make it worse on top of something
when
else.
When a CEO or COO or somebody in the C-suite goes to Capitol Hill and testifies, is that usually a good thing for the stock?
You know,
what would you guess?
That's usually the bottom. That's usually the bottom.
And we haven't seen that yet.
Right.
Does that worry you?
It doesn't necessarily worry me, because I'm with Steve in this regard in terms of, this is a company with some growth, right? I mean, I think we all agree they still have growth. But has some of it sort of flattened out? I think some of it has, yes, on the Facebook side. But you go to the other elements of where they are seeing some of the monetization in terms of Instagram and sooner or later WhatsApp and some of the others.
But
that's going to be the area that I think actually makes up for some of the losses on Facebook, which are completely different types of sites.
I agree with you. The problem is privacy affects the entire platform. It's not like you have a business
but
where
it's more critical
a small
for the
percentage of their business has been affected by something and they could lose that revenue or
David,
have an impact on that revenue.
Anything
We're
other
talking
than politics,
about their entire business.
If this was about anything other than politics, the story would already be over. People fight really hard for their teams. Everyone in this country will never admit. If you disagree,
everybody here is on Twitter, right? Have we seen a swell from the public about deleting Facebook or abandoning Facebook or leaving Facebook behind?
Isn't
that shocking?
Well, I'm not sure. First of all, again, I don't think the regulators are done here. There's talk about self-regulation by Twitter. I don't know if we're in a world where people can let these guys self-regulate. I also want to say that if you look at Facebook stock, it's significantly underperformed the triple Qs, not just for 2 months, not for 6 months, but for 2 years, folks. I mean, it's had for all this growth, and it's had other things that I think have been weighing it down, and this was one of the big things that was hanging over it. Maybe this is the moment. I think they're still overhang.
Coming up, we'll have much more on the scandal surrounding Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and the response to a statement as the fallout continues. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, First in Business Worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
It's about the future, isn't
it?
I'll tell you where he
is. Yes, it is.
And one analyst says the Facebook fallout could lead to a major blockchain boom. He'll be here to explain why. Plus,
you
hear that? Five Dow stocks are flirting with bear market territory. And a top technician says one is flashing a major buy sign. And when you see what it is, you might be pressing buy too. Much more when Fast returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. It's been a volatile year so far for the Dow, and a handful of stocks are now in or very close to bear market territory. Let's get to Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange for more. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Melissa. The S&P is just 5% over its 52-week high, which is also the all-time high, but there's an unusually wide spread between the winners and losers recently. Several stocks are already in bear market territory. There's one big outlier, GE, 55% off its 52-week high and at the lowest level since 2009, but there are other companies that have entered bear market territory or are very close. Walmart, for example, 20% off its recent highs, but it's done a complete 180. It was $87 in October, rallied to $110 in January, but a poorly received earnings report has brought it back down to $88. The consumer names have performed poorly as well. Procter & Gamble, 18% off its recent highs after a poorly received earnings report in January. Merck, also 18% off its recent highs after two disappointing earnings reports, October and February. And then there's oil stocks. Even though oil has rallied 8% this quarter, oil stocks are all down. Exxon's down 10% for the year, 16% from its 52-week high. This is a very odd divergence between oil and oil stocks. Finally, even home improvement stocks have been faltering. After rocketing almost straight up for 5 years, Home Depot hasn't been the same since disappointing commentary in late January. Now it's 14% off its recent highs. A lot of casualties recently. Back to you, Melissa.
All right, Bob. Thank you. Bob Pisani at the NYSE. Our next guest says some of these Dow laggards are actually a buy right now. Let's go off the charts with Robert Slimer of Fundstrat Global Advisors. Hey, Rob, what are you looking at?
Thanks very much. So as Bob highlighted, there's a lot of dispersion between the leaders in the market with technology stocks rocketing. And then we've got five or six names that have really come off a lot. We've got GE down 55% off its highs. And when we rank order these stocks from those off their 52-week highs to those off their three-month highs, they pretty much sort out the same. So as we go through the dumpster and say, well, what's buyable in this group? Is there anything that we want to own? Particularly if you're a little bit concerned about some of the volatility that you're seeing in the leadership stocks, I think there's a few names to take a look at. So let's take a look at Home Depot. I think this is probably your best bet. This is a very long-term chart going back to 2014. And here's Home Depot right back to the buy point around its 200-day. We like the home building space. The home builders are starting to firm up. On a relative performance basis, Home Depot has just pulled right back to that long-term support level. It looks very attractive. And it's probably the best-looking name of these six laggards within the Dow. So now as we work down the list and find some other names, is there anything else here that we can take a look at? Well, Walmart's had a big move. It broke out of that huge trading range that we saw back through 2000, 2010, and it too has pulled back to the 200-day. So there's a trading opportunity there. And what interests me, and this is very early, but this long-term relative performance downtrend is beginning to turn. You can't see it particularly well here, but there's early indications there's a shift. So you have this pullback, you're at the 200-day. I think that's probably your next best name within these six laggards to be buying. And then lastly, energy, a complete disaster with Exxon. However, it is into this big band of support, not particularly drawn well, but down in that $70 level. But the relative performance is still making new lows. So it's a pretty cautionary tale. But versus Procter & Gamble or GE, to me, this is a better trading opportunity. We like other energy names better. The E&Ps act a lot better. But I think there's a trade in Exxon back to the 200-day moving average.
I think Rob comes over. What do you guys
Absolutely.
I mean, he's not even wearing snowshoes and he's braved the snow in Kalana. Ryan's going to bring the chair.
Came over
Thank
in the Northeaster, bro.
That's
Good
right.
To see you,
Second
man.
Time.
So if we see bounces in these Dow laggards, do you also see continued leadership of the Dow leaders that we're seeing
now? I think that a lot of the leadership, if we look at tech, for example, semiconductors went through a big pause between November through to the February lows and resumed leadership. I think the problem with a lot of the tech stocks is they're a little bit advanced here. So they're working through a consolidation. It's not a lot to be alarmed at from my perspective. I don't think the cycle's over. And then when we look at names like Boeing and
Caterpillar.
Thank you very much. Through big consolidations, I think it just takes time. So I think if you're trying to balance out a portfolio, diversify your exposure, you're worried about market exposure, you're worried about some of the extended stocks, like we saw with Facebook, and I think it makes a lot of sense to look at some of these laggards. The leaders that have pulled back, like Home Depot, I think are really timely in here.
Robert, do you see this? When I look at these consumer names, the names that you just mentioned, I look at them as leaders, where they'll fall off the cliff a little bit earlier than the overall market. But obviously, the market needs to recover. And usually, to your point, these things recover first. The consumer names recover first. The market will follow. I'm looking for one more swoosh to the downside in the overall market, which still could be on track for these consumer names. But with these consumer names, do you look for them to bottom first and then the market to rally after?
I think the market went back to secular leadership first, right? Off the February lows, everything that led was secular in nature, away from cyclical growth. So when we look at the consumer names like Home Depot and some of the home builder stocks, I think they've already had their correction. I don't think they're going much lower. I'm not convinced we're going to get another downside move in the market. I think it's going to be a sloppy trading range in earnings. We're going to be back and forth on this show talking about it's rolling over, it's starting to firm up. But I think if you look at it, we had a big peak beginning of February, and we're just going to work our way sideways.
Robert, when you look at something like a Walmart, the rest of the space has also had a lot of trouble. I mean, it was a week where we were Target at a bad number, Kroger at a bad number.
Yep.
What about that whole space?
Well, some of them are actually starting to firm up. Right? Like names like Gap stores are holding in there. There's pockets of strength in the consumer discretionary space after lagging for years. So I think those are slowly carving out bottoms. Are they leadership? I don't see them as leadership. I think they're trading stocks.
Yep. Rob, thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Slimer of Fundstrat. Are you a buyer of any of these laggards?
You know, the only reason I say Exxon is because everything else in the space, in my opinion, is garbage. I look at Exxon and say it's got a yield of 4.1%
everything
yield.
Else in the space.
Well, I just don't trust energy
space.
Right now.
I'm not a big energy fan, but
I don't believe in energy here. I just don't a lot of short covering, and I just wouldn't be a buyer. And I also do think Home Depot is a name that I would be constructive on.
Absolutely.
That.
And the reason I say
Home Depot.
Oh. I actually own ExxonMobil. I own it virtually where it is right now. It's done absolutely nothing for me. But in the meantime, I'm waiting with the 4% yield. But Home Depot is the interesting one because let's remember, spring is their Christmas. And the Christmas time is coming big. This is going to be
brain teaser.
And Home Depot.
Spring planting season.
But I love the fact that he brings that one up technically because I love what's going on fundamentally. And I think it probably broke down because it screamed to the upside. And now if he's saying technically it's a buy,
I'm going to buy roses and tulip bulbs. And I'm going to see Santa.
You're darn right. Oh, I'm Santa because I'm happy to see you in there, big boy.
Happy to see you. In there, big boy. All right. Yeah. Still ahead. Just going to move on. Could the Facebook fallout be paving the way for blockchain technology? RBC analyst Mitch Steves, who predicted crypto to $10 trillion on this show earlier this year, will tell us why Facebook's pain could be blockchain's gain. Plus, Winter Storm Toby slamming the Northeast today and wreaking havoc on the airlines. Morgan Brennan's at rather deserted LaGuardia Airport in New York. Morgan.
Melissa, deserted is the key word. Take a look at this. You got rows of cancellations. These types of boards in airports across the U.S. East Coast right now. We're going to talk about what it means for travelers, also what it means for the companies when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. The Northeast getting hammered with its fourth nor'easter of the season, leading to thousands of flights getting canceled. Morgan Brennan's at LaGuardia Airport in New York. She's very lonely out there. Morgan.
I'm a little lonely, Melissa. When's the last time you saw LaGuardia Airport look like this? It's practically a ghost town. You can see this right here with this TSA security checkpoint behind me. The gate is down. It's looked like that for hours now. We haven't actually seen a flight take off or land here at LaGuardia Airport since at least noon Eastern today. All In FlightAware says because of this storm, we are now at more than 4,400 flights that have been canceled today into, out of, and around the U.S. Another 2,500 have been delayed. That brings the total for the month of March on the heels of three storms ahead of this up past 16,700 cancellations. Now, a lot of this is originating here in the New York metro area, but you're also seeing cancellations in Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. Those are major regional disruptions that ripple out to other parts of these airline carriers' transportation networks. It's the reason American Airlines says that about a quarter of its global operations now have been impacted from this storm. The airlines, though, they've been very proactive. Many of them canceled flights ahead of the snow coming in today. They also waived change fees days in advance. The expectation is they will get up and running very quickly. The bigger thing to watch, March, according to analysts, typically the busiest month of the quarter. With all these weather disruptions, what is it going to mean when we get into earnings season in the next couple of weeks? Back over to you.
All right. Thank you, Morgan Brennan. The airline stocks, which have struggled to gain steam as of late, taking a hit, no surprise today. So, Tim, what have you been doing?
Well, I've been staying long Delta and United. And as I like to point out, I think the airlines are tremendous trading stocks because they give you a lot of opportunities like this. Weather is not a reason to be trading airlines. And unfortunately for the bad news and what happened to a couple passengers and the stories around United, that's also not a reason to sell United. Dogs.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think you have a dynamic where people want to look at airlines and try to decide if they're running their businesses more efficiently. And after United gave that earnings call in mid-January, that threw the whole sector on its ear. In fact, that was an opportunity to buy them. They rallied back about three quarters of to their highs, and they're struggling here. I don't think you need to do a whole lot here. I stayed long the names. I don't see them breaking out.
You got longer.
I got longer. My favorite name right now is Southwest. I mean, we all know what Warren Buffett has done in terms of positioning in all the airlines, so we already know that. But there are most of the major
carriers. Well, his most recent commentary was that he could buy an entire airline.
No, we don't want to get too far
into
that.
Are you seeing any options activity that indicates that maybe there might be some more interest in one or two versus others?
To be honest with you, I've seen primarily it's been Delta, and I've seen also pretty good activity today in Southwest. The reason I like Southwest is it's domestic. And that sort of fits if you're starting to try to go forward a little bit and say, hey, what would Warren Buffett look at?
Right.
Wolf Research, by the way, said that they were the most likely.
And strong management and great cash flow, which all the airlines overall, I think, fit that. United, it's still you and I go at odds on that one. Munoz has not addressed things properly.
Won't be the first time, Pete.
Still ahead. Facebook losing the trust of millions of its users this week after the company's data practices come into question. But could the Facebook fallout be paving the way for new types of technology? We've got the details. Plus, traders are piling into one tech stock that's already up 50% this year. We'll give you the name and tell you what has them so excited. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Facebook losing the trust of millions of its users this week as the company comes under fire for its privacy practices, or perhaps better word for it would be lack thereof. Now CEO Mark Zuckerberg did finally break his silence this afternoon, saying he made mistakes and vowed to protect user data. But the scandal does bring to light questions about how safe your information is online and whether big tech companies need to adapt to new types of technology, like maybe blockchain. So will Facebook's pain be blockchain's gain? For more, let's bring in RBC analyst Mitch Steves. Mitch, great to have you with us.
Yep, thank you for having me.
The fundamental problem that Facebook faced was that it had agreed with a third party that this third party can tap and scrape data, but then that third party went ahead and distributed that data to another party. If there was a way to track this data and where it went, maybe this could have been caught earlier or even prevented. Could blockchain be the answer to that, to actually be able to track where data goes?
Yeah, so I'll be very careful here with my wording. So if you want to use blockchain technology in Facebook's environment, for example, you could actually track what was sent to who. So what I mean by that is, let's say you load up a photo, you could tell if that photo was sent to a third party, if it was sent to somebody who didn't want to see it through privacy settings. But the one problem there that it does not solve is it does not allow you to stop it. So let's say Facebook decides to sell your photo to somebody, some advertiser in, I don't know, Korea or something like that. You would be able to see that transaction happened, but you would not be able to prevent that transaction from occurring in the first place.
Is it possible, and I know this is sort of projection, and I'm not sure if you could even answer this, but is it possible to use that, but then create a program or layer in maybe artificial intelligence so that it will flag the fact that it has been distributed to another party, that the transaction has continued to somebody else?
Yeah, you could 100% track all this stuff. So the way I would describe it is, let's use Bitcoin as an example because it's the easiest one, right? Mm-hmm. The two problems that Bitcoin solves is that first, you can see every single transaction. So if you use blockchain technology in the Facebook example you're giving, you could track every single time that photo is sent. So let's say I only wanted my mother to see it. I could see if she sent it to somebody else because there would be a digital footprint to track it, right? The problem that it does not solve if you use it in a centralized environment is that it doesn't prevent them from doing it, though. So let's say I say I want to send my photo to my mom and that's it. It doesn't actually prevent her from sending it to somebody else. So that is the kind of the difference between blockchain and decentralization. And so blockchain would solve the transparency issue, but it would not solve the control issue you have.
All right. The last time we spoke, you said that you thought that a lot of these companies could actually face perhaps being disintermediated
or having their business models challenged because of this notion that, you know, we're moving to a decentralized world. There's a Bloomberg report today that Google is working in blockchain-related technology to support its cloud business. Do you think that we're going to be getting more and more of these headlines? And do you think that these companies, that this is sort of a project, or that this is a meaningful possible business opportunity for them, that that's the way they regard it, at least?
Yeah, so I think they're looking into the space because they want to decide how they're going to attack it, right? Because basically what Google is doing, if you read the press release closely or the article, it doesn't say they're trying to create a decentralized distributed ledger. It just says a distributed ledger, which at the end of the day is just distributed computing. So what they're doing is trying to find a way to increase transparency. So if I give you information, I know exactly who it was sent to. But if we create a decentralized social network or a decentralized storage device, for example, then the user would actually have control of who sees the data. So I think that's where we're going long term. But yes, I think using blockchain in terms of a centralized environment gives you transparency, but it doesn't give the user control over who gets to see their information, who doesn't.
The last time we spoke, Mitch, in the first note that you put out on Bitcoin and in the blockchain economy, your projections were for $10 trillion. Does that ratchet down at all, given the bear market that we've seen in Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies in general?
No, I don't think it ratchets down at all. In fact, I kind of get a good idea of who understands the space based on the kind of declines, right? Because if somebody invested in Ethereum at the beginning of last year, let's say the price is $275 today and cut it in half, you still would have gotten a bigger return than investing in the S&P 500 since 1978. So basically, calling that a decline is pretty outlandish to me, because you're looking at a year and a half return that's better than 50 years of equities returns. But if we look at this over the next several years, there's still going to be a lot more development that needs to come. So, for example, using blockchain in a centralized environment is kind of the first step. But it's going to take another 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe even more years before we see a decentralized environment where in the future, somebody like yourself no longer has to give their photos to Facebook or to a central entity. Instead, you can just share that photo specifically with people, and then you'd be able to track it and make sure that it's not shared with somebody else who gets access to your information.
All right, Mitch, we're going to leave it there. Great to see you. Thanks for your time.
Yep, thank you.
Mitch Steves of RBC. What do you think of this notion of using a blockchain that could help? I mean, tracking the information is sort of half the battle. We know where it went, at least.
Well, I think it's very interesting. I think the whole model is shifting, and he mentioned it's 5 years away, five-plus years away, before we get to a decentralized platform. And I do agree with that, but I do believe the model's shifting. I mean, it's sort of pay-to-play right now. You give up information, and you get a free platform to sort of use. Now people are recognizing the value of the content that they're putting on the platform or information they're putting on the platform, and are looking at it from the standpoint of, I deserve to be, you know, sort of paid for that, if you will, instead of the advertising revenue going right back to the company. So I think there's a shift here that is really important to pay attention to.
I think it's interesting to see the companies that are embracing blockchain, because you don't think about it as these big conglomerate companies. When you look at Intel, first of all, IBM, Watson was supposed to move the needle on IBM, and it's never probably going to move the needle. But when you look at blockchain, maybe that has the ability to everything in conjunction with AI and everything else that they're working on. Maybe that moves the needle. But what was the most interesting out of that list was Intel, up 11% year to date, Internet of Things, connected home, connected everything. And then when you throw in there the blockchain kicker, the chart looks good as well. So Intel looks pretty interesting.
Still ahead. It's the one stock that is up 140% over the last year. Some traders think it could soar even higher. We'll give you the name and what's got them so bullish. You're watching Fast Money. We're live in a very snowy Times Square. Look at that snow coming down. Don't move. We've got much more show right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Micron reporting after the bell tomorrow. The options market is implying some pretty big moves for this hot chip stock. Let's get to Mike Coe out in Austin, Texas. He's got better weather than us, that's for sure, Mike.
Yeah, that's for sure. Here we are in the south. It's a little bit warmer. So Micron is a name that typically moves a decent amount on earnings, about 6%, but it's implying a larger move than that this time, 7.3%. And we did see above average call activity. At one point, actually calls outpaced puts by about 4-1. And where most of that activity was concentrated at that time was the weekly March 63 calls. At that point, 8,500 of those had traded for about $1.50. So that was options traders betting that Micron's move was going to be to the upside. And we actually saw subsequently even larger call spreads trading in April, 60, 65 strikes among them.
Thanks, Mike. Pete, we go to you. Would you buy Micron into earnings?
I would. I don't right now. I don't presently own it. I'm in Intel, but I was out of Micron just about a week or so ago. But what I like is the pricing. They've got pricing and they've got demand right now. So it's really, the chips are all on their favor right now for Micron. Is there a show that talks about options at all?
There, yeah.
Right.
There, yeah.
What is that? Good thing to do Friday afternoon around 5:30.
I would. I'll be there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know what? There's the office action.
Nice.
Yeah, Friday, 5:30 p.m. Love Eastern time. And we'll see Mike Ho, I think from Austin, Texas, in fact. All right, coming up next, final trade. We put a poll out there on Twitter asking if the worst was over for Facebook. Here are the results. More than 1,000 of you have voted. 72% said no, the worst is not over.
Boom.
58% had no idea what Facebook was.
What's he saying about the view?
He's talking to
someone. Time for the final trade, Pete.
I love the financials, as you know. Goldman Sachs got pounded down a little bit. I think the stock goes higher.
Steve Grasso.
I'm not one of those 72%. Facebook, final trade. Whoa.
XLE Energy rally today was total short covering. Seller of the XLE.
Happy first day of spring, Mel.
Happy first day of spring.
Facebook. Home Depot. Buying. Ultimately, I think it's a name that the comps are great. Robert talked about the technicals look interesting. Tailwinds on them.
Merry Christmas.
Home Depot.
Springtime is Christmas.
Home
Depot.
You know, your mulch to work, right?
I'm Alyssa Lee. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money with the one and only Jim Cramer starts right now.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.